Welcome to the Gooder Podcast, where we talk with powerhouse women in CPG about their journeys to success. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm guiding mission-driven consumer brands to attract new and passionate consumer base, crush their categories through growth and innovation, and magnify their social and environmental impact. If your brand is in need of brand positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we are here to help. You can find more information at www.retail-voodoo.com.
Well, hello, this is Diana Frike. I am the host of the Gooder Podcast, where I get to talk to the powerhouse women in the food, beverage, and wellness categories about their journeys to success and their insights on the industry. Thanks for joining us today. Really quick, I want to introduce or reintroduce to some of you Retail Voodoo, the episode sponsor. Retail Voodoo is a brand development firm. Our clients include Starbucks, Kind, REI, PepsiCo, Hi-Ke, and many other market leaders. We provide strategic brand and design services for leading brands in the food, wellness, beverage, and fitness industries. If your goal is to increase market share, drive growth, or disrupt the marketplace with new innovative ideas, give us a call. Let's talk. You can always find us at retail-voodoo.com or just send an email at info@retail-voodoo.com and we'll get back to you. Okay. Well, today we get to talk with Liz Mieslick, partner of growth. Am I going to say that again? Today we get to talk to Liz Mieslick, partner of Loft Growth Partners, and she is an investor, partner, and champion of mission-driven brands. Has spent nearly 20 years leading emerging consumer brands across food, beverage, and fitness industries. Her operating and leadership experience make Liz a valued partner to entrepreneurs, investors, and management teams. Liz has led M&As and forged partnerships with many iconic brands in the natural space, including General Mills, Annie's, Epic Provisions, Cascadian Farms, Mondelez, Unilever, and many more. It's no wonder the New Hope Media, dubbed her a Wonder Woman in the natural products industry. Well, hello, Miss Liz. How are you?
Hi, Diana. It's wonderful to see you and be with you and your audience today.
Thank you. Where are you calling from today? Or where are you?
Denver.
Woot woot. Yes. All right. Okay. You got to spill the beans. Wonder Woman, New Hope. That's high praise from New Hope. You got to spill the beans. How did that come about?
Well, I have to say that many of the women at New Hope are Wonder Women themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's an incredible organization that many of your listeners will know is really, I would say, the hub of the natural products industry, having put on many shows over the years, Expo West, Expo East, which all of us have attended, and not to mention many different media platforms that they have as well to support the needs of the industry and provide information and support. So, yes, I mean, when that came out, I was incredibly humbled because I aspire and rely on them for so much. But, you know, I would say, too, that there's just not enough. It was a signal to me that just not enough women that are in this industry. We need more.
Yes.
We need more great women that are, you know, doing incredible work and are recognized for it. Because yes, let's face it, we are the consumers, and there are many women starting great businesses, yes, that we all use every day. And so we just need to be celebrating them and putting them out front more and more and more. And so, yes, that's one of the things I aspire to do in my role at Loft Growth Partners, is to connect with more women entrepreneurs, to provide them with more help and resources and support, and ultimately capital to help them grow.
Nice. Well, so tell us, why does Loft Growth Partners exist? What are you all about?
Well, there's three of us as partners, and we're blessed to have a team of five. We're a small team, mm-hmm, small but mighty, I would say. But all of us have come together, and my partner Andy started the firm 20 years ago, way before there was much in the way of investing in this space.
Right.
Came together because of a real desire to elevate entrepreneurs and really help to build and support the ecosystem of people that are creating products, mm-hmm, that are changing people's lives. Mm-hmm. And in so doing, you know, building a business is really, really hard.
Yes.
It's a marathon, not a sprint. And it is oftentimes one of the greatest joys and challenges that people face in their lives. Mm-hmm. Or maybe second to raising kids, but we can talk about that in their podcast. Okay.
Yes.
But it's so hard, and it is it's a personal journey and a professional journey. And so having ourselves been on that journey, most of us here on the team have been entrepreneurs or have led businesses. Mm-hmm. We understand it, mm-hmm. and we understand all the different facets that go into it, including not just the operational and financial and marketing and sales side, but really the people, which is the most important aspect of it. And so our name is reminiscent of what we aspire to do, which is to elevate the people building these brands so that they can be their best selves, to show up for their customers, to show up for their teams, and show up for, you know, their investors, everyone that they need to be there for, to grow and succeed. And so it's a little bit different spin, I think, than, you know, a lot of maybe investors talk about. I think we all do it in different ways, but that's really what we're about, is elevating the people. And by virtue of that, elevating the brands.
Mm. Well, this is an interesting segue then. As I was doing my homework, I saw that you were involved with a brand called Mix One that sold to Hershey in 2011. Again, this is slightly before the naturals and organics became this investing supernova, I guess is how I would describe it. And I'm curious, if that transaction, I know you can't talk about the details, but I'm curious if that transaction went down the same way that it would have gone today. I just thinking how forward thinking that was of Hershey's at the time.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
I think first and foremost, it was an idea that was brilliant, created by three amazing people who, very different people, but came one of whom was a naturopath who had really, had his superpower was in nutrition and helping people to live their best lives through what they put in their bodies. That's mm-hmm. Dr. James Rausch. Greg Stroh, who, was also the founder of Izzy. So this was after he had the successful exit of Izzy, to his next venture. Mm-hmm. And then Wes Brasher, who had been, a retailer, had been on the buy side, working at 7-Eleven, nationally on their beverage portfolio. Mm-hmm. And so each brought very different strengths, built a product and a brand that really resonated and spoke to consumers. I think was ahead of its time, because mm-hmm. now today we talk about functional beverage, and that's sort of an overused term. Mm-hmm. Back then, that wasn't even a category yet.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to your point, I think to the direct question that you asked about the, you know, that experience of selling to Hershey, I think what's interesting is that, yes, there are a lot of consumer products companies that are exploring and playing outside of their, what I would say, their core categories.
Yeah.
Certainly Hershey wasn't known for beverage, had a lot of, you know, was really building its snacks portfolio. And that can be a tremendous boon for the brand and for the people behind it. It can also be a challenge.
Yeah.
Because frankly, any of the brands that we're building are going to be, you know, a rounding error in comparison to the massive billion-dollar brands that companies like Hershey's mm-hmm. have and cultivate and build and grow. So with that said, again, it can be a beachhead, you know, entering a new category for a large consumer products company can be a beachhead for a new realm, or it can be a situation where, you know, the brand doesn't have enough gravitas, enough mass, enough scale to really drive that forward. And that was mm-hmm. the case with Mix One. So mm-hmm. what's interesting about that, I think the takeaway for entrepreneurs is that just because a strategic shows interest doesn't necessarily mean that's the best partnership for you and for your business.
Yeah.
And so I think it's very alluring when people come calling. And it's great. I mean, I don't disparage the fact that, you know, there's a lot of strategics who are having a lot of conversations with brands.
Yeah.
I would just caution any entrepreneur to recognize that a lot of those conversations in the early days are exploratory, and they want to learn. They want to learn from you. You're doing things that they can't, and they struggle with.
Yeah.
And so, you know, having those conversations and what that leads to doesn't always mean that's the best for you and your business.
Right.
I think that's the big takeaway from the Mixed One experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Well, let's head a little bit further back before that, kind of closer to the beginning of all of this. Can you take us down the path from where you started to where you are now? Just kind of at a high level, I remember you saying, when we were preparing for this unit, that you had never really applied for a job in your life and you kind of fell forward into opportunity. Talk to us a little bit about that.
I think I was very blessed to have a father who was an entrepreneur and a very unconventional guy and led a very unconventional life and career. And so that taught me that you can be successful without following a traditional path.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what he challenged me to do as I was coming of age was to really figure out what it is that I wanted to contribute and what really, what was my passion? What did I really love and what did I feel I could contribute? And I used those two questions to drive sort of everything I've done in my career since. What do I have, you know, that can be helpful to others? And what is it that I love that I know I'm going to put my heart and soul into?
Mm-hmm.
And it really, the consistent thing throughout my career has been about, you know, natural organic and this lifestyle and really helping. I really truly believe that you can live a healthy, vibrant life by virtue of making choices that are good for your body and good for the planet. And we're seeing that's becoming, you know, very conventional now, which is great. It's only recently become that way. And so I think the idea, you know, of food as medicine and what you put in your body and how you care for your body will influence, you know, how happy you are, how good you feel, the relationships that you have. I really believe that. And so being a part of that and helping make that possible and helping businesses that are focused on that is where the passion is. And that's where, how can I contribute is, you know, I have a set of skills that help me and help businesses to grow and thrive and help me partner with people in a way that I can help them see around corners and solve problems. And so those are the two things. And so whether I've run a brand, I've run brands, I've served, as a division head in bigger brands. I've served as an investor as I do now. But you know, whatever I can do to be connected and close to entrepreneurs who are growing, facing challenges and all about, again, health and wellness, that's where I thrive. So that's sort of the pathway. But specifically, you know, started my career in this industry with a company called Gaiam about 20 years ago. Attended my first expo in 2000 when it was a tiny little corner of the Anaheim Convention Center. And it was really, everyone knew each other. I mean, it was sort of like a family reunion to where it is today, which is a massive business and where you have, it's an industry that has attracted the most talented, most successful, most interesting people across many industries who are now, you have a lot of the tech entrepreneurs and investors who find this even more interesting than tech. They've shifted their strategies and our focus on food and on consumer products and even the, I would say the borders between consumer and digital and technology have really blended in a way that you have companies like Beyond Meat that are sort of tech companies and food companies. I mean, there's just so much exciting things happening. So I really feel grateful to be able to be in a position of supporting brands and entrepreneurs and providing investment to them and help along the way.
Yeah. Wait, have you always been kind of this, has your DNA always kind of had this contribution component to how do I want to say this? Have you always wanted to contribute to something bigger than just the bottom line? Has that always been there, or is that just something that's evolved as you've been going through and meeting these amazing people and just living your own life?
No, I think it's if you're only focused on the bottom line, it becomes a very small life. I think the reality is that you can, again, my father taught me this notion of abundance mentality. And if you have an abundance mentality that you are focused on things that you think are really important to you and to the world, you're going to be successful. And that's played out in my life and played out in the lives of many people that I admire and aspire to sort of follow in their footsteps. Mm-hmm. And so I think in our industry, you know, not only is it an opportunity, but it's now become an expectation that your business and your life is about more than just what your bottom line is in the brand that you have. I feel like so many businesses are not only including a component of giving back, but in mm-hmm. fact, it's part of the foundation of who they are and where they're from. And I think one of the classic and most loved examples of this is Patagonia, right?
Yes.
Patagonia makes decisions. They make business decisions based on first what they think is right for the world.
Right.
And the business follows. And look what's happened. I mean, they've become an incredibly successful brand. And in spite of making, you know, if you looked empirically at the financial choices they made along the way, maybe they weren't the best financial choices, right. but it benefited their business overall over the long term.
Yes.
So that's what I think is our opportunity. And again, I think consumers expect it more and more people are waking up, and Gen Z and millennials also have kind of grown up with these values of there's more to life than making money. And so making money is a means to an end. It's not the end itself.
Yes.
And I think that's also true in building a business. And if you're successful and thriving and with your team, with your customers, your brand will be successful.
Yes. Well, I want to step back, and you mentioned something that I want to talk about, because what I saw decidedly happen about 3 or 4 years ago is when tech or Silicon Valley investors started to point at the better for you industry. I felt like things started to change within the industry itself. I saw a shift of less women in leadership roles. We started to see a little bit less diversity in those leadership roles. But more so what I was finding is a lot of these better for you brands, or not maybe a lot, but many better for you brands, kind of are mission driven from a marketing standpoint, but not from a DNA, because where the investment capital is coming from and the desire to kind of push through for revenue or to push forward through an M&A. How are you reconciling this, or how are you seeing prospective brands that you are providing guidance to? How are you helping them navigate this? You know, like, here's this somebody with a lot of money, but they're going to come at it from this angle versus organizations like yours that come from this POV. Is it tricky? Is it commingled? Or is there a pretty straight and clear line between who's doing it for profit and who's doing it for other reasons?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think ultimately profit is a component in the sense that, you know, part of the, you know, you cannot do good without doing well.
Absolutely.
Term, right. You have the more prosperous you are as a business, the more people you can help, the more good you can do in the world. So they're symbiotic.
Yes.
In my mind. I mean, you have to be successful.
Agreed.
I think one of the things, so I want to answer your question, but I have another build on that too about what I've seen that I think is an interesting contrary to that, but also true.
Okay.
But so in terms of diversity and leadership, I would suggest has always been an issue in our industry.
Okay.
And is it less so than in tech? Maybe. But frankly, where we see a lot of female entrepreneurs are founders, you don't, as these businesses scale, you don't find many female CEOs in these businesses.
Agreed.
And that's a problem. And it's even more of a problem if we think about diversity of, you know, ethnic and cultural diversity. We don't, we have even less of that. And so that's a huge issue in our industry that we've got to fix. And there's, I'm part of, very proud to say I'm part of the JEDI Collaborative, which is, we're focused, on, you know, really helping to navigate that and address that. But we're also struggling to figure out, how do we solve this problem? Where do we start? How far back do we go? Do we go back to schools and even giving kids this sort of opening the aperture of what they can do and what they can be?
Yes.
Do they even know that they can start a business? And then when they do they have access to seed capital?
Mm-hmm.
Even before we're more growth equity, we're a little bit later stage, but do they have access to seed capital?
Yeah.
Can they find angels? Do they even know where those people are? I mean, it's a systemic issue that we have that we've got to solve, that there's not one thing that we're going to do, but we've got to work on it. And so there's a lot of people doing a lot of good work on that front, but we're woefully behind. And we have, any industry should be ahead of that, because I think we have values here
absolutely
that are different than other businesses.
Yeah.
So we got to live by those values. And then to the point of the sort of the balance of profitability, cause and sort of mission of the business. Yeah. What's interesting there is I think that the market is dictating more than anything right now the importance of that.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is that consumers, particularly again, Gen Z and millennial consumers, are expecting and are choosing to buy from companies and people that share their values. Mm-hmm. And the access to information about what companies' values are, who's behind them, is more democratic than ever, right? People, I mean, all we need is a phone and a camera or access to the internet and social channels to figure out who's really doing the work and who's not. And people are very eager to share. Actually, sometimes that can backfire. I think sometimes businesses that are trying to do good, including little companies that maybe mess up, I think there's sometimes a difficulty in forgiving them when we all in fact make mistakes. But ultimately, I think that, even the most financially minded investor is seeing that there are just greater multiples. There's greater value in enterprises that have mission as part of their core business model.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really exciting. So it's really, it's an economic discussion as much as anything. So I think that's positive, but is it enough? No, but it's going to be more. Again, the buying power of this generation, particularly Gen Z, as they continue to have more and more income, they'll have more buying power. And the generation that follows them too, I think this isn't going away.
Yeah.
Just again, access to information and there's so much choice. We can buy, 20 different brands of bread. So why not choose the one that is really focused on giving back and helping communities and helping farmers, right? I mean, there's just, we have an abundance of choice and we can make those decisions. We're fortunate in that way. But another interesting thing that I find that's happening is that, you have also, as more and more investment has come in, you have, a lot of people, I think, getting access to capital and growing their brands, and without necessarily benefiting from that. I mean, I think there's, people talk about the capital markets are so abundant and it's so easy to raise money. And I think that the downside of that the sort of negative impact of that some have seen, and I think others will, that I just want to caution entrepreneurs about, is that the earlier you raise money and the more that you raise, the less that you're selling your portions of your business.
Yeah.
And the more you do that, the less you own and the less control you have and the less opportunity there is for you to benefit from the success that your blood, sweat and tears have created.
Yeah.
And so I think that this abundance of capital has led to a lot of situations where just tragic situations. Where I had one tell me one time, I can literally make more money working at McDonald's than I can in my business because I'm not paying myself anything and I don't own any more equity in my business.
Yeah.
And other people own me and I can't even make decisions anymore. And that to me is the ultimate tragedy of the market that we're in now. So we always like to talk about how great this is that there's so much capital, but I just want to caution entrepreneurs to think about, how much you're spending. I know for myself, if I have more money in the bank, I'm probably going to make less prudent decisions about how that's spent than if I have less. So I try to instill that in my kiddo too, about abundance that can lead to less disciplined decisions than if you kind of, create some scarcity in terms of how you're thinking about investing your dollars.
Right.
And so that's what's great about entrepreneurs is they're so scrappy when they're starting out that they make decisions and that lead to some really creative solutions for their consumers and for their business that ultimately is what bigger companies and investors like me love.
Yeah.
But then if you start raising too much money, you kind of lose that. So
Yeah, I remember the .com bust. That's also aging me a little bit there, but I remember when, you know, this is 99, I think it was 99, and this whole entire concept of the web started to explode, and all of these tech companies were getting flooded with capital, and they were spending it on everything willy-nilly. And that was the demise of the industry for about a heartbeat. It rebounded pretty quick, but the crash was pretty hard once people started to go, we might need to be a little bit more prudent here on how you're, and I think that's when the investors at the time started to put their fingers a little bit more. Different industry, but I mean, we kind of go through cycles. Different industries do these types of things where flood the market. And then if people start to be a little bit more cautious and maybe overtly controlling, hopefully it'll swing back the other way. But there's always going to be bad partners. That's just all there, you know, that's just the way life and business is. But one of the things that I wanted to say in regards to diversity, and I think you and I might have talked about, but the work that the hatchery is doing in regards to diversifying the category, bring in, and I mean, in every strata, we're talking about age, ethnicity, disability, formerly incarcerated, military, in the work that they're doing in Chicago and the advisement that they're bringing in, those investment partners that are advising, is such a great collaboration. And I have hope that as more of these, I think there's another place in San Francisco, there's a little small one here in Seattle, as they're starting to grow, that these entrepreneurs won't feel so scared. But I will tell you, I speak with a number of young entrepreneurs, and young in age, but also young in their business. They could be older. They don't know, who do I talk to about getting a sticker done? You know, how do I, where do I get this manufactured? Things that you and I are completely networked about, that they don't know where to start, and they've got a great idea. And it would be great if we could somehow make that information more accessible. And I think that maybe that could be the start, is like, how do we tell small business owner, people who even want to consider a small business, how do we just even tell them that this world exists, that this world of support exists out there for them? It might be community centers, could be community colleges, you know, just dripping, drip, drip, drip. I don't know. You guys are probably, it's called the Jedi Collaborative for a reason. I hope one day to be able to be absorbed into the collaborative, because that's what this podcast is all about, is, you know, normalizing this kind of leadership and getting that information out.
We can really use your voice, your megaphone, and your creative ideas, Diana. Seriously, it's the questions and ideas that you just shared right now are brilliant. And I think yes, the hatchery is a great resource. And what is great about that is not only are all the fundamental building blocks that team has put in place with regard to, as you said, manufacturing. And, you know, office space. I mean, all of kind of blocking and tackling things, but also importantly, the community of people. So you're in a cohort of folks that are in it with you and facing the same challenges and problems, because this is a life journey that it's the biggest journey that most people will ever go on. Mm-hmm. And the hardest and the most rewarding, because most of the people who come out the other side want to get back in, but it's hard. And so having people that you can lean on and support you and you can support along the way is really important. I think we underemphasize that as well. Yes, you need money. Yes, you need manufacturing space. Yes, you need to know where to make those labels. You also need a community to be part of a community.
Yeah.
And I think I really commend the group at the Naturally Network is one too that has taken something that was a small grassroots sort of networking organization in Boulder, and they've expanded it to now many different cities. So folks can look on naturallynetwork.org, I believe, and many cities have communities. And what's one of the benefits, I guess, of this Zoom world that we're in is that, you know, you don't have to necessarily live in one of the communities that Naturally Network is in, because now they have Slack channels where there's groups getting together. They have virtual events like this, where you can sit on a Zoom and I hear about how do you get your product on the shelf? Where do you get your labels made? Yes. All those things. And how do you just deal with the the day-to-day challenges of feeling yes. like people are saying no to you all the time? How do you get yes. right through that? Yeah. So all the things, you know, that we face when we're building brands, that is one organization that is, it's much more about content and community than the building blocks like the Hatchery, yeah. but all of it's important. And if folks don't live in Chicago, they can access that, that community as well.
Yeah.
But yes, for those that are in around Chicago, the Hatchery is an amazing organization, and it's even blossomed and bloomed because where they yes. started was to provide co-manufacturing space.
Right.
And
right.
it's blossomed into something so much bigger and better and wonderful. So I love that. I want to plug them too, because it's a great organization.
Yes.
Let's hope that they can, you know, franchise or expand that model, and that others will do similar things in other cities where, you know, there are people who are building these businesses and need help and need support.
For sure. And I would love for them to start in places where there's people who are economically disadvantaged because industry is gone. You know, places like Detroit and parts of Philadelphia where big industry is pretty much gone and vacant. And a lot of people who have amazing, great ideas, and they just need information. That's literally it. They just need information.
You know, that reminds me, there's another really interesting group that has done just that. A gentleman named Richard Thompson founded The Factory, which is it's in Pennsylvania. It's kind of near Easton, where there were a lot of, shut down factories.
Yes.
Right? And there was a lot of boarded up space. And these are these, you know, when you regenerate these buildings, there's these big, open, lofty kind of spaces, cool brick and everything. Yeah. And he built essentially an incubator there where he partners with entrepreneurs and provides a lot of shared services that many of them need, like marketing help and creative help and sales help. So that's another interesting model that's slightly different, but really serving the same need and the same goal as the Hatchery.
I think I love it. Like, let's just keep cheering those folks on.
Absolutely.
Now, can you tell me, was with Loft Growth Partners, was this you and your team coming together, or did you join them? I don't remember how that came about.
So I joined. So the company or the fund was known as 2X Consumer Products Growth Partners, which is a mouthful for a long, long time. Andy Whitman started this firm back in 2001. So we're in our 20th year, and we recently changed our name to really reflect more of what was back then needed to have a descriptive explanation of what we do. Mm-hmm. So now there's enough understanding of what investors do and what investment is that we can really focus more on what's the real work that we do, which is to elevate our entrepreneurs and help them be their best selves and their companies thrive. And the investment is a part of that, but it's so much more. We actually met about, I want to say a decade and a half ago when I was running a small portfolio of condition specific brands. So we were doing a bunch of businesses that I was leading that all had several things in common. One of which was they were using nutrition to help solve real chronic conditions like ADHD and Alzheimer's, macular degeneration, things that people live
my goodness.
In their lives. And for which, you know, there's lots of scientific data that shows that nutrition can really help, if not really solve the problems, the underlying issues, at least mitigate the symptoms of those issues, of those diseases. Yeah. And we were building these brands in a direct to consumer way, way before it was in the mid 2000s, before people were really buying food online. And also through alternative channels, places like that you would not expect to find or buy food products, to kind of create a new way of merchandising and returning food products. And I met Andy then, and I was working with a different investor. So he was not an investor in these businesses, but he was incredibly generous with his time, with his network, with his office space to help me to be, you know, to solve problems, to figure things out. And I never forgot that, because again, that's going back to why do we exist? It's really to elevate this whole ecosystem and to help people, even when it doesn't serve our financial needs to do so. And so he showed me that. He lived, and I just never forgot that. And when I knew I wanted to dedicate myself to this fully, you know, that was my first call. And fortunately, it all worked out, and here we are.
Awesome. So, you know, you've been with these, with Loft for, I'm going to call it Loft for shorthand, for a little while now. At what point did you feel like you'd landed in the right spot? Like this was the place for you?
You know, I think in the very first week. So I happened really? To land here right in the very first week of COVID, of our shutdown, which was a really interesting time to change. And I'm sure many people listening can relate to through a life change in this last year and a half and how different that's been and more acute in terms of how it affects our lives. But I think in the first week, I had a father who was laying in the hospital, intubated, dying of COVID. I had a kid who was going through online school and hating it. I had no home office, you know, to speak of. I was working out of the dining room, and here I was showing up for work on the first day. You know, just at my dining room table, it was the strangest thing.
Yeah.
And the team, my partners, the whole team, we had a call and I just instantly felt part of the family. Oh. And I was instantly put to work helping our companies through this crazy maze that we've been through and helping them get PPP money. And I really felt like I was, you know, back to kind of feeling useful and feeling like I was able to contribute. And something that I cared about. And so, that was what I knew. It was the very first day we were on a Zoom call like this, just figuring out how do we help our entrepreneurs? How do we help our businesses? And I felt really instantly welcomed and supported and supportive. So,
You said something that I think is really interesting because I've always said this for myself too, but just, I think that I've been hearing it more and more from other people that there is something that happens. I can't remember where I learned this from, but when you are feeling in crisis, when you are feeling out of control, there is something psychologically that happens when you are able to help somebody else in your, like something happens to your brain and your psychology when you are helping somebody else in that moment. And so I find it really interesting that here you are in the middle of several crises, literally, and you're starting on your first day, in your first week, you are extending and helping. And for some reason, that balances out.
I'm so glad you said that because, you know, I think it's so true. It's really cathartic when we can help others, what it does for ourselves.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be anything big. It can be the smallest thing as you know, giving someone a smile, opening the door, to, you know, helping someone raise money to save their business, whatever it is.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't take much, but it does. It really fills our cup when we can help others. And it, especially, I think, to your point, especially in time of need, I can definitely say if it weren't for the fact that I was able to dive in and help others, I don't know how I would have made it through that time. I mean, it was a really hard time. So, I felt needed. I felt helpful, and that really helped me through.
Mm. Wow. So I'm like, okay, all right. How am I gonna? That was a really deep there. I don't want to go into something super superficial right now. But as we're talking about all of this, I'm thinking to myself, one of the things that you wanted to cover was this desire to encourage women to come into this space, into this investment space. And I'm wondering, what are the types of things that women should know if they even are considering this? Do they have to be MBAs? Do they have to have accounting backgrounds? What is this industry from what you do, which is, yes, it's investing, but there's a lot of mentoring and coaching that's going on. What does this industry need? Why should more women be drawn to it than are now?
Well, I'll answer that with a couple of illustrations or stories. Sure. One of which is I remember being back in school 20 plus years ago, much longer than that, actually. Mm-hmm. But I remember one of my professors saying that venture capital is not an industry, it's a fraternity. He said, I mean that in two ways. One of which is that it's a very closed door system. You need a secret handshake to get in, A, and B, it's all boys. And that has really been true. It's still, there's more and more women today. Mm-hmm. And there are more firms like Harbinger and Prelude that are all women. Yeah. Ourselves, we're two, you know, four out of the five people in our firm are women. Yeah. And we have, you know, many of our companies are led by women or have women on the boards or in senior roles, but there's still far too few. So, you know, that hasn't changed much. Another thing that I heard from a very wonderful former entrepreneur, investor, board member, he said, this is a game where the boys play and the boys win. And I took such offense to that. He meant it in a way that he was pointing out that was a problem.
Yeah.
So he was not, you know, celebrating that. He was lamenting that. But
yeah.
Today. And considering, again, how many entrepreneurs who start food businesses, consumer products businesses are women, and we're the consumer as well. 87% of the grocery purchase decisions are made by women. I mean, really, and it is true. And so I think that more and more what I'm seeing and hearing that's really interesting is that private equity and venture firms are recognizing this, and they're recognizing that there's a financial benefit.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a brand benefit to, there's a differentiation benefit to having more women mm-hmm. in their ranks mm-hmm. because number one, again, understanding the consumer, understanding ultimately who's buying these products, A and B, because the people component of being an investor is, I would argue, more important than the financial component. I think more and more firms are starting to realize that. You need a blend of the two. Yeah. You need some rock solid financial superstars. Yes. You also need people that understand people and understand how to sort of bring out people's best selves and best talents and help them lead. Because this is, most funds have a 10-year life. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to be making investments. You're going to be, you know, investors or owners in these businesses for some time. Mm-hmm. And that means, you know, dealing with the teams and the people involved. Mm-hmm. And if you have a good yin and yang of skill sets and of gender representation and diversity of ideas, of culture, of ethnicity, that's only going to benefit you long term. So I think that there's more receptivity and there's more opportunity, but there's still far less than there needs to be.
Yeah. I think you and I spoke about Ashley over at Bluestein Group.
Yes.
She had a lot of similar thinking there around the concept that, well, at the end of the day, it's all about moving money around. Really, the asset is the human and the human condition. And I think you guys are in absolute alignment there.
That's well said. Much better said. The asset is the human and the human condition. How we help bring out the best in those humans will ultimately drop to the bottom line.
Yeah, because everybody who's starting a brand, while they have a big idea, they want to save the world, they want to save the neighborhood. At the end of the day, it's about them and their family, really. And then if they can contribute at a larger scale than they get to, and that's really what it is. Like, can I take care of my family? Can I take care of this bigger problem? And as you said earlier, when we started, you've got to have money in order to make that happen. And that's really where a team like yours adds such significant value outside of just managing the P&L and the operations.
Absolutely. And so I want to also say, you know, cause you had asked, what does it take? What does a person of color need to get into this business? I would say, you know, there have been two paths in to investing, one of which is the finance path and one of which is the operating path. Mm-hmm. Finance path is that you come up through a financial education, potentially, and then oftentimes an MBA.
Yep.
You've been in investment banking, so you've gotten a sense of deals and understanding sort of the, you know, the all of the aspects, the dynamics, the modeling, the structure of putting deals together, of mergers, acquisitions, investments. And then you move into the investing side, the dedicated investing side. And there's a very well-worn path there. And again, when we look at majority, although this is also changing, the majority of MBAs being men, that's no longer true. In fact, you know, here are two women on this call who are MBAs, right? That's not all you need.
Right.
But that's a path. The other path is the operating path. And that's the path that I came through, which is running businesses, having the experience of building brands and going through that journey. And then you come out the other side and you say, you've learned a lot over the course of doing this. You've seen those transactions, you've worked with investors, you've worked with, potentially with investment banks and, you know, and seeing your company sold or what have you. So you see that side of it, and then you can come in through that lens. And that's often, you know, what they call operating partners, folks who are former operators who come in and then serve as, you know, not only helping the investors make decisions on what they should invest in, but also helping the businesses to succeed. And a lot of coaching, mentoring, sometimes filling the talent gap if needed.
Yes.
In a role in the business, but that's another path. So, you know, there needs to be more paths, but those are two well-established paths that just give you a lens into different ways in which you can come into this space.
Yeah.
And again, I think there's a lot more receptivity to diversity now, not nearly enough, but, I think, you know, people of color and women have an upper hand now, in having the opportunity if they can come through one of those means or create their own.
Yeah.
The other thing we're seeing is that you can start your own fund and we're seeing a lot of first time, you know, people of very diverse backgrounds starting their own funds and attracting investment and making investments. And that's incredibly exciting to see as well.
Yeah. Well, I think what I want to say, see if I heard you correctly. And I want to just reinforce this. If I did get it correct, what you're saying is you do not need an advanced degree to become an investor. In fact, it could be more valuable for you to have had no degree and running a business for 20 years to be a good investor than somebody who's gone through the investment channel. Now, I'm not saying that's explicitly true one way or the other. What I'm just saying is you don't feel like an advanced degree is the only way that you're going to get into investing. If you know what you're doing, especially if you've gone through it over and over again, then you're quite valuable as an investment strategist. Did I get that right?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely true. And I think both, ultimately, having both inside of, of an investment firm creates great strengths.
Yes.
Because, you know, there's, if you run a business, you may not be as astute on the modeling or deal structure side.
Exactly.
And that's important. But folks who are have only worked in finance will not understand
the nuances, right? Yes.
Building a business, it's walking a mile in the other person's shoes. So I think both are important, both are channels, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to talk one last question here before we start wrapping up. And this is around raising capital right now and kind of some things that you're seeing that you kind of would like people to understand better, and what the opportunities look like for those that are in capital raises, whichever grade they're in.
Absolutely. Well, one thing I will say, I'll point folks to our website. We have a ton of resources.
Oh, great.
On our website that help people just, you know, on many levels, including if you're raising money, just running your business day to day. So if you go to loftgrowthpartners.com and click on resources, you will find lots of different tools there. And one of the things that we have there and focus on is the is understanding how to manage cash in your business. And I would say that is one of the most important things to understand, you know, before you raise money is how to manage cash. And so there's a video on that. There's a handout on that. And I'll also point people to the Hirschberg Entrepreneurial Institute.
Yes.
Gary Hirschberg, who is himself a very successful former entrepreneur, founder of Stonyfield Farms, has dedicated his life now to helping others and puts on several events per year, the Hirschberg Entrepreneurial Institute, with lots of information. And we're very symbiotic in our views on the important, you know, factors in being successful early on as an entrepreneur and building a brand. And cash management is one of those.
Yeah.
And so I encourage people to look at that. I think that the most important thing is there's access to a lot of resources out there.
Yep.
I would encourage folks to really be able, and not everyone has money to run a business.
Right.
It costs a lot of money. But to really, there's a lot of angel networks. There's friends and family. There's a lot of access to funds that outside of, professional investors that I think early on can be more patient, more supportive capital.
Yeah.
When you get into venture capital, it's a very different formula for
very
success.
Different. So, yes.
I encourage people to use more friendly forms of capital early on when you're figuring out your business and you're trying to figure out that product market fit and understanding, spending money will do for your business, how to find the right formula of investment and results in your brand. And then as you grow, your needs for capital will change. There's debt and equity. There's many different forms of financing. And so there's lots of seminars, again, on HEI. There's information on our website through the Naturally Network on the pros and cons of all the different types of capital out there. I think it's good to be smart about that, to know what's available and really chart your path as you grow, what's going to be the right source of capital at the right time.
Great.
And be thinking ahead. Even before you need it. And I think the best advice is to build relationships early with folks that you think you might want to be investors later on, because it is a relationship. It's a marriage and money is a commodity.
Yes.
But everybody's money is the same color, but you want to have investors who believe in you and believe in your business. And so really be selective. Be discriminating and choose people that you think, if times are tough, this is somebody who I want on my side as opposed to someone who I think might, keep the beatings will continue until morale improves. you want that person who's going to be a true partner. So, figuring that out, meeting with people, and it takes time. It's like this full-time job talking to investors.
Yeah. And it is.
And so you have to kind of be okay with that. But again, it's in service to your business and choosing the right partners along the way to help you as an individual be successful and your business to be successful.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing Gary up. What a gift he is to our community, isn't he?
Oh, yes. He's amazing.
I mean,
he's amazing.
And he feels like a friend, even if you don't know him at all. Just the way he carries himself. He's just an old soul. So thank you for bringing him up as a resource for those that have not heard of him. And really, the Hirschberg Institute is amazingly great things as well. So thank you for doing that. Liz, our time is almost up, but I have a few questions that I like to ask every guest. And I'm wondering if you're okay transitioning. Is there anything that we didn't cover today that you for sure wanted to share with us?
I do. Diana, I just want to say, first and foremost, I want to thank you for providing, this podcast to people, because I think you're also helping to inspire and inform, a whole community of people that I think by virtue of listening are better off and are more excited and have just, feel like they have others that they can lean on and have more abundance of really what's going on in this community and the wonderful people that you bring out here and share with us. I mean, I'm a listener and I just really appreciate the guests you bring and the work you do. And so I just wanted to say, please keep doing this and thank you.
Oh.
And you're really helping and supporting this community in a way that you may not even realize. So I wanted to acknowledge
that. Thank you. That's generous. Thank you. Okay, well, let's move to this. I wonder if you might have some sort of interesting tidbit or fact. I call it a happy hour fact, something that somebody might share during their next. Did you know that, about investing, like maybe how much money exchanges or what the average investment looks like for a certain phase or anything at all?
I think one tidbit that I think is really exciting is there has been in the last 10 years or so, $20 billion of value transfer, meaning consumers have voted with their wallets to the tune of $20 billion, moving away from big brands, big established brands, and buying entrepreneurial brands in the consumer product space. Hmm. So $20 billion. So consumers are literally voting with their dollars.
Yes.
They want the products that you're creating, and they want them now. And that's why you have all these big brands that are buying companies like Annie's for $850 million or Justin's $294 million or, you know, these are RX Bar for $600 million.
Yes.
I mean, just crazy numbers. So you can see how important and how valued and valuable these businesses are. So, you know, on those days when you're feeling like, I can't do this one more day, just think about some of those numbers. Think about all the good you can do in the world by virtue of, you know, you can be the next Gary Hirschberg.
Yes. You know,
take the success that you've built and help the next generation of entrepreneurs. But there's so much good that comes out of building these brands. So keep going. Don't give up. And know that this is, you know, no one's asking for the next cookie brand or the next bar brand. You've just got to be the one pushing it forward and making it part of people's lives. So don't give up. Keep doing it.
Yes. And I'll say that while that number is huge, when we think about what the marketplace is in general, there is a lot of room to grow. So keep doing it, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Are there any women or other women leaders or rising stars out there in our industry or not that you would like to elevate or simply admire for the work that they're doing for our communities? And if so, why?
Oh, so many. Where do I start? I think, there's a few people that I think of when I think of like who's really doing really good work. I mean, I think about, and there's been so many, wonderful, entrepreneurs who have built brands, like who inspire me, like Laura American of Larbar or Coel Tomei of Noosa. Who have done amazing things. I think about, you know, women working. I'm just going to put a plug for one of the incredible women working in one of our businesses, Brian McComb. And Brian McComb is the VP of operations at NoCal.
Okay.
And, you know, she's, out there and building. I mean, she was a one woman team for a long time and building, what is a very, very high growth business in it with a very challenging set of ingredients and a very challenging supply chain in the midst of a pandemic, you know, figuring it all out and making it all happen and making it look easy. And she's just incredibly, she's smart. She's creative. She's funny. She's a mom. I mean, she's just like, she's kind of all the things that you just like look up to because she's got a sense of humor about it, but she works so hard and she's been so successful and she's really made a huge difference. Another person I'd like to elevate is Eliza Blank at The Sill. So we're very proud to also invest in and partner with Eliza. So she grew up loving plants. Her mom inspired her with a love of plants. And she wanted to share that love with the world and provide people a means to enjoy plants and understand how to grow plants in their homes. And she started a company called The Sill. And The Sill, right out of New York City, right out of Brooklyn. And it's a company that that curates and cultivates house plants that, for me, it's really changed my house and my life because I have much more good oxygen in my veins.
Awesome.
By virtue of her company because, you know, she's demystified growing house plants. And I'm certainly not someone with a green thumb. And my cell plants are the only ones that live in my otherwise very destitute plant environment in my home. So, and she's inspiring lots of women. So last year when Black Lives Matter was happening, she was out front and putting her brand and her team and herself out there supporting the movement. And, you know, that's something that a lot of folks didn't have the courage to do.
Yeah.
So I want to celebrate her as well.
Oh, that's, and what a happy business that can be. Plants. Come on now. I love that. Oh, thank you for sharing that. And the last question that I ask everybody is, what brands or trends do you have your eye on and why? And that one, maybe, can you share that? I know that's a little bit of your secret sauce back there. Yeah.
You know, we like investing in things that are long-term trends. So it's not the what's the hot flavor of the day, but really what do we think is changing how people interact. I think the thing that we're really excited about is natural personal care. So, you know, this is, we're talking about skin care, body care, hair care that is free from all the horrible carcinogenic chemicals that we use in our, in many of our products. That's something I remember presenting to, a group of really large food company executives back in like 2006, how this was the next wave in the natural products industry. Yes. Here we are, 15 years later, and it's just really coming to be. So, companies like Seaweed Bath Company, Surratt, Winky Lux, which is a business we love as well. I mean, there's so many great brands that out there, Nourish Organics, that are doing great work in that space, Skin Fix. There's a that's a really exciting space that we like. Also, the natural cleaning space, which has really blown up, benefited hugely from COVID, obviously.
Yes. Yeah.
But cleaning our home shouldn't mean that we're literally toxifying our bodies.
Right.
So many, you know, so many cleaning products are incredibly toxic. So we love a brand called Sensitive Home that is doing it with very non-toxic ingredients and great people behind that. Some of the folks from Method are, you know, founded that company.
Yes.
So there's a lot of great. So I think those are two categories that are really emerging and we'll see tremendous growth in the years ahead.
Yeah, I'm excited for the growth in natural cleaning as well, especially since green science has really ramped up the efficacy. Because, I mean, those of us that have been around for a while, that's me, remember a time where natural cleaning products required a bit more elbow grease than the hardcore stuff. And so it's pretty, I'll use the word rad, that you can buy a natural product and pretty much have the same level of efficacy when it comes to general cleaning and detoxing your home and that sort of thing. So I like that. Thanks for that observation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember those days too. And they've definitely come a long way. Yeah. And now they're not only, they smell great. I mean, there's some really cool. And in fact, just to plug a retailer too, Grove Collaborative.
Yes.
Heard of it.
Yeah, I have a friend that works there, or she's an investor there. Ooh, we might know somebody.
Cool. Very cool. I mean, I love what they're doing. So they're making a lot of these products available and helping consumers understand what to buy and demystifying it all. So yeah, love Grove as well.
Yes. Yes. Wow. Well, we have been talking with Miss Liz Myslick, partner of Loft Growth Partners. Liz, where can people learn more about you and what you're up to?
On LinkedIn, on our Loft Growth Partners website, and I'm at all the shows. So I'm excited to go to the new, to the next first in-person Expo East, although we're all going to be wearing masks, which I appreciate and respect that decision, but no one's going to know who anyone is.
We're going to have to wear our name tags.
We should wear our name tags on our masks.
Oh, hey. I like that idea.
Yes. But I love to meet entrepreneurs. So please, my email address is on our website and
great.
Or just check me out on LinkedIn and let's connect.
All right. Liz, thank you so much for your time today and for all that you're doing out in our industry. We're really excited to continue to see how you and your team will be able to help the future brands of the world. And I really, maybe we can connect. I would love to meet you in person at Expo. If it still goes on, I'm knocking on wood, like, let's find a time to say hello. Hey.
Yes. I'd love that.
Oh, I would love it.
I love too. That. And we'll have to give a signal of what color is your face mask so we can recognize each other.
Oh, you'll know. I have a uniform that I wear that is pretty indistinguishable. So what? I'll be, yes. Yes. Anybody that has met me at any food, actually any trade show I've ever been in would know that I am the person that wears all pink. And I mean all pink.
I love it.
Yeah. Down to.
I love it.
Yeah. That's me.
You might be the only one. You don't see much pink. It's a lot of black and blue. So
yes.
Yes. Pink. I love it.
I know. Wow.
Thank you so much, Diana. This has been a real treat to be speaking with you. And again, thank you for the work that you're doing and all the great people that you bring on and all the things you teach us. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Okay, everybody, we'll see you again next time.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to click subscribe and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.